It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Liz Reed, filling in for Paul Guggenheimer. As campaign season shifts into high gear, Pennsylvania voters are being inundated with political messaging. From television commercials to social media to live debates, it can be hard to find the truth behind messages so carefully crafted to win hearts and minds and ultimately votes. Jerry Schuster teaches political communication at the University of Pittsburgh. He joins us now to talk about the strategy and the psychology behind political messaging. Jerry, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good to be with you. Thank you.
So my first question, how much of this messaging, TV ads and things that we hear, how much is about communicating facts and how much is about making us feel a certain way so we vote a certain way?
Well, I think that the latter is more true. As to trying to generate facts in 15 or 30 seconds or even a minute, that's pretty difficult to do when you know that the ad that you're seeing is very slanted to begin with. Obviously, it's focused to accomplish a goal, either to, you know, develop an opinion of yours that's negative toward the opponent or to reinforce something very positive about, whoever the ad is supporting.
And yet, when we see, like, the ads, they present it as if it is all about communicating the facts. We often see, you know, quotes from newspapers, or we hear Corbett cut $1 billion in taxes, or we hear Wolf's company doesn't pay taxes in the state of Pennsylvania. So how do we reconcile that? They're trying to make us think that they're communicating facts, but in reality, it's about trying to make us feel a certain way.
Well, I think most people take ads like that. Many people take ads like that with a grain of salt, recognizing that with the limited time that they have in order to do an ad in terms of producing it for radio or TV, there's not a lot of information that can be reproduced and generated. So they look at those ads, especially when broad-based statements without reinforcement are made, and they say, nah, you know, I don't know. I guess that's true. And if you hear it often enough, and that's the good part for, political advertising. It's repetition that reinforces what's being said. And in terms of effectiveness, recent polls indicate that apparently the ads, at least by the Governor Corbett's campaign, are not having a tremendous amount of impact.
I think that's a good segue into looking at some ads. I'm going to start with some attack ads. First, we've got an ad from Corbett. Listeners have probably seen this one, but in case you haven't, or just to jog your memory, I'll describe it. It shows four guys standing in a row. They're supposed to be Tom Wolf, I guess. They have TVs for heads. You know this one? They have TVs for heads with a face that sort of looks like Tom Wolf on the TV. And it goes from TV to TV, and the Tom Wolf character makes these sort of worried-looking faces as each accusation comes forward, and he tries to turn himself off, you know, because he's a TV. So let's take a listen.
Tom Wolf spent millions bragging about himself in TV ads. But when Wolf was asked to make public information about a questionable loan Wolf received, Wolf said no. When Wolf was called on to release the findings of an audit disclosing how women were treated at Wolf's company, Wolf refused. And when tax issues led to Wolf being asked to release his company's tax returns, Wolf said no and no. Tom Wolf, what's he hiding?
Okay, now I want to play the response ad from Tom Wolf. This shows Wolf walking in a sort of middle-class-looking neighborhood. And then when he talks about gas taxes, it cuts to a pretty unflattering picture of Tom Corbett and then back to Wolf at the end. Let's hear it now.
Have you seen Tom Corbett's ads attacking me? Get real. It's Tom Corbett who's been sticking it to the middle class on taxes. Corbett cut $1 billion from education. Now, almost 80% of school districts plan to raise property taxes. Meanwhile, we're the only state that doesn't charge oil and gas companies an extraction tax. But Corbett raised your gas taxes through the roof. I'm Tom Wolf. I'll be a governor who stands up for the middle class for a change.
We heard about Tom Wolf allegedly not paying his fair share of taxes, about Corbett raising gas taxes, but what's really going on in these ads?
Well, they're trying to, in the Corbett ad, they're trying to establish a particular aspect of the campaign that up to this point hasn't been discussed.
And what's
Tom Wolf, well, honesty, integrity, and that Tom Wolf isn't Mr. Nice Guy. that he has some skeletons in the closet that the general public should see and not see him as, you know, he's basically looked at like a, boy, I shouldn't say this, a university professor, you know, and that he's a meek, mild-mannered man and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to go after the nucleus of what Tom Wolfe is, in their opinion, all about. How successful it is, I don't think that played very well. Of all the ads that we are under discussion, I think that's the least effective, which is probably why it ran for the shortest period of time, at least at this point.
So what was it about that ad that didn't play to voters?
Well, you know what? When you talk about so many issues, the gender issue, the loans, things like that, people have to have a bit more detail. You have to be really unthinking, I think, not to require more information before you determine that what they're saying is true. That's probably the biggest issue that ad leaves blank. You know, where do I go to find out more? I know that there's generally a listing of where this information came from, like the Pittsburgh Tribune review on Saturday, June 6th, or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And you could research that if you wish, but it's so fast. I think that was a 30-second ad. And if you researched it, you may have even missed where it is you should go to look for the source to back that information up.
There is a lot of information. So now let's shift to the Tom Wolfe response, which for the most part is sort of a response, but then there's this one part where he tries to sort of stick it to Corbett. They've got this really unflattering picture of Corbett, which obviously they always choose unflattering photos of their opponents. What's going on in that Tom Wolfe ad?
Well, basically, Tom Wolfe is trying to reinforce two things. One, that without saying it directly, but by example, that Tom Corbett's governorship has focused more on high-profile and more wealthy constituents and corporations, as opposed to what Tom Wolfe recommends that he or suggests that he will do, and focus on the middle class. And he reinforces that in almost every ad that he does. The fact that he mentions often, not in this ad so much, but he gets to it in subsequent ads, where we still don't have the excise tax for Marcellus at the capping their gas from the wells.
Mm-hmm.
And that he suggests will be a major source of income for Pennsylvania and won't have to be paid by, quote, the middle class.
Right.
And then he also begins to talk about the gas tax, where it could be upwards of 28 cents by the time the full construction impact is being used.
Well, I think we have one of those Wolf ads, or a Wolf ad that talks a lot about the middle class and also talks about the Marcellus Shale. This is a positive ad from Tom Wolfe. The people you hear at the beginning are workers in a factory, and during the rest of the ad, you see Tom Wolfe talking to these workers, you know, as if they're just like old friends. Let's take a listen to that.
We build SpiralMate.
And ProRail.
We're number one in North America.
Here at Duckmate Industries, Pennsylvania workers are proud to make top-rated parts for ventilation systems. And they're proving there's a future for manufacturing in Pennsylvania. I've got a plan to rebuild our manufacturing economy. And we'll do it by connecting companies with vocational education to ensure that our workforce is trained for the jobs of today. I'm Tom Wolfe, and together we can build an economy that works for the middle class.
And then we've also got a positive ad from Tom Corbett. And as you hear him speaking, what you see on the TV is that it's not actually a voiceover. It's supposed to look like little snippets of different real-life conversations that he's having with people. So let's hear that one.
I campaigned in 2010, and I made a promise. Less taxes, more jobs. And I've kept that promise. And every day we work to see where we can save the taxpayers' money, where we can invest it more wisely, more efficiently, so that we can grow the economy in Pennsylvania.
We've decreased taxes in Pennsylvania. By doing that, we see the economy growing. We've seen unemployment go down.
Since I took office, we've added over 150,000 private sector jobs and continuing to grow. I think that's what the people of Pennsylvania want, and that's what they're getting.
So what both of these ads have in common is that they feature the nominees having conversations with normal, everyday, middle-class-looking people. And is what we're seeing in this conversation, or I'm sorry, what we're seeing in these ads almost more important or as important as what we're hearing?
Absolutely. One of the things, one of the methods of ad producers is to, it's called testimonials, but on the street testimonials, meaning some comment from everyday people, the average constituent, the average voter, where I like what Tom Corbett's doing. I like what Tom Wolf is suggesting he'll do. It sounds like the person next door is essentially what they're trying to do, which adds credibility and takes away the, you know, in other ads there have been paid actors doing certain, making certain comments, and that's been routinely slammed. But it's more credible if I hear it from someone who looks like me, has expenditures like me, and, you know, suggests that this is what will help me reduce my economic issues.
Does it also help when the, or I guess, is there a difference between when the candidate themselves narrates the ad or does the voiceover in the ad versus having a professional voiceover actor?
Well, that accomplishes two things. One, it has the candidate stand in front of them, and it's one more face and name recognition opportunity. And the fact that Tom Wolf seems to do this very well and seems very comfortable and is getting more and more comfortable while he's on camera. And the rap on Governor Corbett is that he's very uncomfortable in the same scenario and environment. So,
has he said that, or is that just sort of how
it appears?
No, that's
been the criticism of many people, that if you meet him personally, he's the greatest guy on the block. You couldn't have a better conversationalist, that kind of thing. But if he's in a crowd atmosphere environment, then he's not quite the same, doesn't have the charismatic appeal that a Tom Wolf does.
Right. Now, in terms of positive ads versus attack ads, is one more effective to than the other? Are they both necessary for a successful campaign?
Well, if the attack ads didn't work and didn't generate some sort of impact, that, believe me, they wouldn't use them because they won't throw good money after bad, mm-hmm. given the cost of a general campaign in the first place. So those kinds of ads, plus the second one you referred to was, the second type of ad you referred to was what?
Well, a positive ad, so a sort of one that just focuses inward rather than focusing on the other
issue
candidate.
Focused.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the issue-focused campaign probably carries more weight if, in fact, the issue that's being discussed is an issue that's of relevance to the vast element of constituency, what voters are thinking and feeling at the time. So there is a lot of research that goes before an ad is developed, and that has to be, they do this by means of, you know, certain kinds of polls and opinion polls that are not broad-based, but rather trying to determine what you're thinking at any given time. And let's understand, they do audience analysis very closely focused, too. Like an ad that you see in Philadelphia may not be the same ad that you see in Pittsburgh, or may not be the same kind of ad you see in central Pennsylvania, all of which have different constituencies and political philosophical differences. In central Pennsylvania, they're far more conservative, and in western Pennsylvania, it's an aging demographic, and that's not meant to be something negative. It's just that you address the needs of somebody on limited or fixed incomes. Mm-hmm. And when you get to Philadelphia, you have a much, much more urban focus, and so you start to address issues there.
Is there a difference in the rhetoric of challengers versus incumbents?
Challenger doesn't often have to respond to, remember, he or she has not been in office at a given point, so they haven't made decisions that have impacted the constituency.
Okay.
So they can make accusations or make level criticisms, and they kind of don't have to respond to them because the most that can be said about them is that, well, gee, you haven't had the experience that I had. If you have to make a decision like this, what would you have done? That's usually the question that should be asked, but almost never is. And so the challenger has the advantage in those areas. On the other hand, if the incumbent has done a pretty fair job at his or her job, then basically they can call to your attention, hey, here's what I did under these circumstances. Do you honestly feel that other person has the experience to do the same?
How has political campaign messaging changed over time, and how has the internet and social media changed the messaging?
Well, it's immediate. I mean, social media has done, and the one most sophisticated using it at the time was President Obama, and then everybody got on board and decided, wait a minute, you know, this is the way you attract social media users, and generally speaking, that's part of the population and segment that focuses on younger persons from the earliest voting age 18 up. But, you know, that's the way you get to reach those people because they simply don't take time to listen to the radio, watch TV, news, and or, you know, do an sophisticated analysis. So they're going to take it in short blips.
So what's how is the strategy behind using social media to get your message out different than, say, a TV or radio ad?
Well, it is more immediate, number one, and you can focus a little bit differently and say things that you might not typically be able to say. And by the way, it's without, except for the person who is sending the information, it's extremely limited cost. That's the major advantage. It's immediate and low cost, as opposed to developing an ad for radio or TV.
And do we see differences in messaging coming from underdog candidates versus from front-runner candidates? Do we see trends as, you know, polls have Wolf ahead right now? Is that going to change how each candidate approaches their messaging from here on out?
Well, I doubt very much that it will change Wolf's much. He has to stay aggressive, and he has to make sure that he doesn't just rely on polls as an indication of possible strength.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it, first of all, they could be incorrect. It wouldn't be the first time. And number two, the worst thing that could happen to someone who is way ahead in the polls, as Tom Wolf is alleged to be right now, is that his supporters stay home on Election Day.
Because they think that he's doing well enough without them, or?
Yeah, that they say, man, you know, I'm supporting Wolf, but I can't really say that I'm going to go vote today. I've got a meeting to go to.
Right.
So that's a disadvantage, and candidates who are in that position have to stay focused and have to be just as aggressive, and sometimes even more so. The classic case that was similar to this was the presidential election of Gerald R. Ford and Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
At this time in the campaign that year, Carter was ahead of Gerald Ford by about 22%, pretty much the same way Wolf and Corbett are right now. And they decide, there were some in the Republican hierarchy who thought, nah, this is a lost cause. And someone else decided that within the hierarchy and better decision-making, they thought, let's change the strategy. Let's just focus on Gerald Ford, who he is, right man, right time, nice guy kind of approach. In that, in those last 6 weeks of the campaign, the percentage shifted so much that if 13,000 voters in Ohio and Kentucky had changed their votes, Gerald Ford would have won the election. And there was a 22% disparity 6 months earlier, or 6 weeks earlier.
So are you expecting maybe that Corbett might change his approach based on this latest poll numbers?
I'm going to say that the kinds of questions that have been asked by the pollsters are indicative of the fact that much of this is, boy, I hate to say it because it sounds so simplistic, is more lacking in charismatic appeal by and some mistakes in saying no new taxes, like read my lips kind of approach, than anything else. Tom Wolf is staying on focus. And, you know, that's the difference in this campaign right now. Unless Tom Wolf gets lazy and unless some new unknown topic or issue raises its head between now and November 4th, the polls may be relatively close to the way it's going to turn out. I'm not going to say there's going to be a 22% disparity,
right?
But it certainly does not look good for Tom Corbett at this point.
And my last question is, do commercials, social media, debates, speeches, do these things really change voters' minds, or do they just entrench people in their positions?
Well, often they change. If some other new issue comes up, yes, they do change minds, and that's the only way they can bring it to the attention. But they have to, the two words that are critical in the, at that point, though, is review and reinforcement. Say it over and over and over again. But it does have the impact and the result of reinforcing an already embedded attitude and of a particular candidate, particularly if it's a good ad.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with campaign messaging over the next couple of months and what happens in November. We've been speaking with Pitt Communications Professor Jerry Schuster about political campaign messaging. Jerry, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for asking me. Have a great weekend.
You too. Coming up, we meet the woman who married Pittsburgh. It's East Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.